Recently, I participated in a Vipassana silent retreat of 9 days, and I want to share my experience with you. First of all, obviously, this is a very limited experience. I will tell you how the retreat was organized and what we did, but I don't know how other retreats may be, better or worse. Second, the experience I have is starting from zero to whatever insights I may have developed in a 25 century long tradition. So certainly it is very limited and very fresh and genuine, but still you shouldn't rely on it exclusively. However, taking all that, if you can organize your life so that you can for 9 or 10 days detach from the modern way of living and dedicate that time to an experience like this, it is highly recommended. Vipassana is a meditation practice developed by Gautama Buddha, Siddhartha, 2500 years ago, and adopted by what then became the Buddhist tradition, and preserved over the course of time through word of mouth. Without having been written down for many, many years. The practice wasn't known outside of Tibet, India, what we today call Bangladesh, and other areas where Buddhism was practiced. And it gained a wider knowledge and garnered practitioners about 100 years ago, or started to do so. Tibetan monks, after China's invasion of Tibet, left together with the Dalai Lama and started talking about their practices in other places. And in the 40s and 50s of the 20th century, the practices started to be translated into English, and then from English into other languages as well. The original language of the practice is Sanskrit, and I am not going to attempt to use the Sanskrit terms too much, as I am sure I would butcher them. So let me start by telling you what one does, what happens. First of all, you have to take a serious decision about investing your willpower, because during the silent retreat, you don't talk and you're not talked to. You don't read, you don't write, you don't use your devices or the internet. You don't even look each other in the eye. The whole setup is to concentrate, to purify the mind, and through the meditation practice to improve your ability to concentrate and to empty the mind of preoccupations, of distractions. In this particular retreat, we were about 70 people, a pretty large group, I would say. the vast majority were women and maybe 10 or 12 males. Fairly separated, not segregated, but you know, we would eat at the same time, but the women would be eating on one side and the men on other tables. The meditation as well, the women on one side and, well, on the other side as well, and then the men. We were in a kind of a monastery, but without the monks, just ourselves in silence. The day starts at 4 o'clock in the morning when you wake up, and then half an hour later, you start with 2 hours of meditation. Then there is breakfast, and then other 2 1-hour meditation sessions. Then a little break, then another hour or two of meditations. Then at 11 o'clock, there is lunch. Then a little rest. That meal at 11 o'clock is the last meal of the day. At 1 o'clock, you meditate again for 2 1-hour sessions, a little break, then another meditation session. There is tea, or for those who must, a piece of fruit, maybe a watermelon slice. And then a discourse by the instructors and a final hour of meditation ending at 8:30, and 9 o'clock is lights out and you are supposed to start sleeping. And this is what happens every day for 9 days. The meditation itself is apparently very simple, because you have to sit without moving for 1 or 2 hours, and you can sit cross-legged on your mat, or you can sit on your knees, or as it was my case, you can sit in a chair. And when you sit without moving, it is without moving. So you don't move your legs, you don't move your arms, you close your eyes. If there is a scratch, you don't scratch it. If there is discomfort or a little cramp, you don't do anything. Now, at the beginning, you take a kind of an oath of making the best effort, of being moral and of being just. And that best effort is a very opportune expression of doing your best, but without being sadomasochistic about it, without harming yourself. So if one, having made their best effort, realizes that they cannot sit still, they can move if they must, or they can also leave the meditation room and just silently let the others keep going. So looking from the outside, that's it. A bunch of people sitting in a room in complete silence, without moving, with their eyes closed for 1-2 hours. And even this period of time is kind of a compromise in order to understand that our feeble minds couldn't stand more, because theoretically, you should do 4 hours of meditation, break for a meal, 4 hours of meditation, break for another meal, 4 hours of meditation, and then start over, right? But no, that is outside of at least my possibility. I know that. So from the outside, it looks pretty simple, but from the inside, it is, well, not that simple at all. The first 3 days, you are told to listen to the air as it leaves your nose and hits the base of your nose. And then as you inhale, it comes in, and once again, you listen to the sensation of your breath hitting the base of your nose. Inhaling, listening to the sensation, exhaling, listening to the sensation. And the instructors, we had two, Eduardo, who founded this association. He is now 80 years old. And his assistant, a female instructor, Masha, who will take over the school, they guide you in focusing your mind, and they tell you if a thought arises, you contemplate it and you let it go. If a physical sensation arises, you contemplate it, you see its structure, you see it transforming, you let it go. And you bring your attention back to the breathing and to the sensation of the air hitting the base of your nose. It's very interesting that the whole practice is very experiential. This particular meditation of the breathing and the sensation of the air hitting the base of your nose is anapana. So anapana meditation is what goes on for 2 hours, then 1 hour, 1 hour, and so on for 3 days. And the language of the instructors as they guide you in focusing gets enriched little by little with the concept of passing of the impermanence of these sensations. They tell you to realize that the sensations are the only way that you know reality, both the outside world as well as the inside world, and that they are this representation of the world rather than the world as it is truly is. But each addition to this view, to this way of describing things, is not presented as a theoretical framework. It is connected every time to a physical effect of your breathing, and then later on to your mental states, and then later on to your physical sensations in the body, etc. So the meditation is very, very experiential. After 3 days, without anyone having told you before, you switch to the Vipassana meditation itself, where you realize that this ability to focus on, in that case, the breathing and the sensation of the air hitting the base of your nose is nothing but a tool, like a laser enabling you to move your attention to a particular place. And you are told to start from the top of your head, going down in the various parts of your body, moving your focus and looking at the feeling, the sensations from that particular part of the body elicit these feelings, these sensations arising, transforming, and then dissipating. And you go through your whole body from top to bottom over the course of an hour, starting maybe with 20 minutes of anapana, focusing, and then 40 minutes of vipassana going through your body. And so that's it. Now, it is hard, right? It is hard to keep the thoughts not impacting your ability to focus. It is hard not to move or to scratch. It could happen, as it happened to me, that when the instructor guides you, maybe you are better able, following their voice, to follow the instructions and keep track of what actually you are doing. But when you are on your own, well, I would find myself going through my body maybe 20 minutes after having started, still having to bring back my thoughts, or rather my focus, letting the thoughts go to the top of my head or my ear or my mouth or whatever step I was, rather than being halfway through or in other places of the body as I should have been. So it is hard. The rest of what I am going to say is extremely subjective, of course, because the practice and the focusing and the effort that is not a physical effort, even though I was sweating all the time so much at 4 a.m. with the windows open in the meditation room, so pretty chilly, you would think, with nothing but a t-shirt and shorts on, I would be sweating so much because of the concentration and of the effort. But still, you know, it is not like working out, but the subjective experiences inside are pretty amazing. I will mention just a few. So you may have seen other videos that I published about my psychedelic experience with 5-MeO-DMT, the extract of the frog of the Sonoma Desert, Bufo alvarius, which is the most powerful psychedelic known to mankind. That is very, very profound, transformative, and also highly recommended. You are unconscious and it lasts maybe 10 or 15 minutes. However, there are very interesting parallels and similarities to Vipassana. In Vipassana, you are conscious, it lasts hours, but you do develop a deep perception of love as foundation of reality. Don't ask me why. Don't ask me what is the non-metaphysical interpretation of that. I am telling you my subjective experience. On top of that, which for me was ever present, your mind opens up to observing, evoking, deeply understanding your experiences in a very emotional manner. You can cry. I did, even sobbing, maybe in your room rather than in the meditation room where you would make it harder for others to concentrate. You can remember things that you thought you forgot. And at least once, when I was in my room resting for just maybe 15 or 20 minutes between meditation sessions, I had waves of pleasure washing over my brain that I can only describe as a brain orgasm. Well, as a consequence of the meditation, I would say. I don't know what to link it to otherwise. Now, the 5-6 days of Vipassana after the first three get progressively enriched with little concepts and little words introduced during the guided meditation sessions as well. And as I was telling you about the day's structure, I mentioned that there is an hour of teaching where the instructor actually gives a little more background, and you also have the opportunity to ask questions, at least novices like me, not anyone who was in a retreat already before, so just a handful of us would. And you are introduced to the concepts of compassion, empathy, suffering as a measure of being far from the deep reality of love and the unity of consciousness, and other components of the practice, including karma and nirvana, where karma is basically the balance of your good and bad actions, and nirvana is the state of enlightenment where you realize the fundamental nature of reality as love and its unity across all the universe. Now, the retreat in my case was completely absent of religious tones. If you ask the Dalai Lama, he will tell you that no, Buddhism is not a religion. In terms of it, one, not having a deity to worship, and two, of not having a dogmatic setup where if scientific progress makes certain practices or certain assumptions become false, the dogma still survives. It is very clear that it has to cede its place. But obviously, a lot of things that would be shared still had a strong metaphysical component. And this is very, very far from my worldview. starting from reincarnation and nirvana and karma and all those things. However, empathy, compassion, love, the benefit of the ability of being able to focus, of not being encumbered by thoughts, of not falling into the trap of recrimination or self-recrimination or regrets for things that you cannot change. These are all extremely practical and positive things. So after 5-6 days of Vipassana meditation, where you are introduced to these things progressively and you work very, very hard, the last meditation was very interesting for me. Because instead of going through the body, calling out the parts as usual before, the instructor said, feel the bundle of sensations of anicca. Anicca is this concept of the impermanence. So feel the sensations, the bundle of sensations of anicca, we call shoulder. Feel the bundle of sensations of anicca, we call arm, and so on. So that was a wonderful, true red pill, because just like in Matrix, if you accept that kind of interpretation, then reality around you dissipates. You don't necessarily see green numbers falling down behind your eyes, but you are led to question the validity of your assumptions, of your sensations, and what also you can do about them, how you go about deciding what you can do about them, and so on. After that last meditation, the vow of noble silence is suspended or eliminated, and the people attending can start talking to each other. So that was amazing, because we would only know each other through our steps or the whiff of odor as people pass each other, or the gesture of taking a piece of food in the communal table as we would be silently serving and eating. And we would know nothing of who each other was and what we experienced and what our life was outside of the retreat. So then you pass that evening or even the night, and then breakfast the morning after, to just know each other a little bit. Wonderful. The recommendation to novices and experienced attendees too is to keep meditating 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. I didn't do that, at least not yet. I may. We'll see. So back to the beginning. If you can organize your time so that your family, your work allow you to have these 9-10 days just for you, it is something I highly recommend. I greatly enjoyed it. Thank you.